Welcome to the Kanem, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. What was the Bush plan going into the 2000 election? Not what it seems, as both George W. and his father, George Herbert, as well as Cheney and Rumsfeld, were members of MJ-12 and knew full well that a pole shift was pending. This was predicted by the Zetas to occur shortly after May 15, 2003. Thus, this group determined, by hook or by crook, to be in the White House during that time. As is known, Gore won the popular vote, even in Florida, where the counting was forced to stop. But the intervention, for the first time in history, by the Supreme Court into such matters, prevented this from being of record. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Popular Vote, written December 2000. What possible reason would there be to call out the U.S. Supreme Court to defend a candidate that had lost the popular vote on all fronts? Gore had won an edge of 21 electoral votes by some 300,000 popular votes and was only 3 electoral votes shy of winning the presidency. Gore also won the popular vote in Florida, a fact clear to even the ultra-right Buchanan, who admitted the 3,000 votes he received above what might have been expected in the Jewish enclave of Palm Beach were not his votes, but Gore's. The Florida vote recount was stopped, repeatedly, by partisan loyalists of the Bush family. Where this might have been expected in Florida, controlled by the Bush family, what would cause the Supreme Court to break its long-standing tradition of not getting involved in presidential contests, a tradition that had endured throughout its history? This appeared to be partisanship, that the judges themselves had been appointed by Republicans, as the final vote was strictly along partisan lines. A deep distrust of the new administration will be the result of this action, which will only be understood when attempts to win over the public for new initiatives seem to fall flat. In disenfranchising the American voter as well as the Florida voter, the Supreme Court did more than express partisanship. They displayed a cold and firm plan by the wealthy elite to survive during the coming changes at the expense of democracy. The U.S. government will increasingly serve the elite and will fail to give any explanation of their actions to the public. In this blatant service to the elite, they will become increasingly irrelevant. An administration serving itself and not a leader the public would respect or take seriously. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Popular Vote. Going into May 15, 2003, the Bush administration rushed into Iraq on false charges that they had held weapons of mass destruction. Why? Well, it's all about oil. As proof that the invasion of Iraq was about oil, and because the Bush administration truly thought the passage, the pole shift, was going to happen in 2003, was the speed with which he invaded Iraq. Before the inspections had been completed, in the spring of 2003, with a rush to Baghdad, risking the supply routes being cut off, a plan the military considered outlandish, and with no exit plan whatsoever. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Iraq Obsession, written November 9, 2002. Korea has the nukes, but is left to quiet consultation and no warmongering. It has no oil. India and Pakistan are squabbling at their borders, and both have nukes, but you don't hear about military exercises near them, as they don't have oil. Russia has nukes and poison gas and bioterrorism means, but is an ally, because to take their oil from them would be difficult. Countries in Africa that find they have some oil are run like dictatorships by U.S. corporations, killing off villages that object without fear of prosecution. So why is the Bush administration so snug with Enron, with a history in the oil industry and utter lack of ethics, such as Harkin Energy and Halliburton, after in Iraq? Well, oil. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Iraq Obsession. It was also about martial law and the ability to murder millions of unwanted mouths to be fed by forcing them to shelter in place in coastal or river basin cities where they would drown during the pole shift, or poisoning them there by so-called bioterrorism attacks, poison gas, deliberate infections where these cities would have to be quarantined or infected via vaccines. Take the chemtrail, or contrail as it is sometimes called, phenomenon. Remember when these sprays sickened those caught under the spray? Flu-like symptoms, but worse than the flu, and the illness seemed to linger for weeks. I had a personal experience with this. I was working in California at the time in the Silicon Valley. One of my coworkers came over from Santa Cruz and reported that she was sick for weeks, couldn't shake it, seemed like the flu. So I asked her, "Do you walk your dog along the beach when you go home?" "Yes, she always does." "What about her neighbors? Any of them sick?" "Some were, some weren't." Found a correlation. Those who came home and walked along the beach, beautiful area there at Santa Cruz, got sick. And those who had not walked outside but went from the car to the house and didn't get whatever is being sprayed up above them didn't get sick. So as far as I was concerned, I had my personal corroboration that chemtrails make you sick. But this was being reported broadly at the time. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Contrail Plan, written December 15, 2001. Contrails are an experiment of the wealthy and powerful to see how much deliberate infection of the wandering masses might slow them down. This has been allowed where practiced because the experiment was couched in terms of crowd control. Those allowing this to continue, the military and national security groups, were assured that only temporary illness would occur. However, the intent of the elite was scarcely temporary illness. Imagine elite groups settling into North Carolina estates, or in valleys in Utah, or in Wyoming. Why would they want masses of the lower class, starving and angry, invading their communities? Thus, when the time came, what was being sprayed upon the starving, wandering hordes would scarcely be temporary germs such as flu. They are to be poisoned. The target is clearly large urban areas of poor and restless folk, such as L.A., for instance, where riots have already occurred. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Remember in the fall of 2004 when there was insufficient flu vaccine from British labs? The Zetas are suggesting that this batch was bad because the contaminant was deliberate, and should the pole shift and earth changes have appeared imminent, this batch would have been used to reduce the population, reduce unwanted mouths demanding to be fed. Who are the recommended first-line recipients? The aged, the very young, the ill, those in hospital, and those suffering from AIDS. Just the very people, someone wanting a strong workforce and no unwanted mouths, would like to eliminate. I got a question at that time from someone asking the Zetas to address the issue, and I quote, "Can the Zetas comment on the recent news from London that British health officials have abruptly halted shipments of flu vaccine to the U.S. and other countries? And does this relate to an increased effort at population sculpting?" End of the quote. And the Zetas responded, and I quote from the Zeta Talk Vaccine Failure, written October 7, 2004. "There is deep paranoia about vaccines among those sensing the plans to sculpt the population during the pole shift. We have warned about plans to blockade large blocks of city dwellers considered too soft for hard labor and likely to be loudly demanding services, so that they drowned along the coastlines or riverbanks or starve in cities, crushed by collapsing buildings and poisoned by industrial cesspools. Then came the Homeland Security mantra to shelter in place and the acknowledgement that Level Red would require residents to remain in their homes. We have warned that the elite would like to select out healthy workers for work camps, separating the rest into camps where they would be starved or poisoned. That the new U.S. draft plans are called skills draft for healthy men and women 18 to 35. This workforce would be quickly assembled and separated from the populace at large under the guise of registering for the draft. We have stated that early chemtrails, sickening all under their wafting spray, were testing the ability of such spray to sicken and weaken migrating populace, with the underlying plans to poison, not temporarily sicken, those considered excess mouths to feed on the move toward the enclaves of the elite. We have stated that when the U.S. military discovered the ultimate plans, they balked at cooperation, and since that time the chemtrails have not sickened. The plan changed. Look to the populace advised to get the remaining flu shots and see what population swath that covers. How is it that an entire production of flu vaccine would be polluted in a manner that failed notice up until the end? Are there not quality control checks? Are there not different batches so that a contaminated batch can be discarded but others surviving? And is the public told what the contaminant is? They are told the result, not the process. So as sheep, they can still be led to slaughter with unquestioning minds. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. What was the overall plan from the puppet master on down through his puppets, the Bush administration, going into May 15, 2003? And how did a delay affect this plan? I quote from Zeta Talk, Changing Captains, written July 11, 2003. Given that Planet X is looming, literally at Earth's doorstep, there is no time to retool and regroup and start over. They must make the grab for world power, the kingship of Earth, and protection of the elite during the coming weeks work now. The Fist. The original plan assumed control of the world's major military powers, which were secured when the White House was taken by political appointment, not popular vote, in the 2000 presidential election. They want continuing control of the White House because the U.S. military has been built up to be a power greater than the combined power of all other countries. The counter to the fist. Because the pole shift has been delayed long past our staunchly predicted date of May 15th or shortly thereafter, the U.S. military has lost respect utterly for the commander-in-chief. The U.S. military was reluctant to go into Iraq, its advice ignored and its leadership treated like robots expected to follow orders without question. Rebellion at the highest levels is seething just under the surface. The energy. The original plan assumed that enemies could be eliminated, resistance intimidated, the weak bribed, and the media controlled. This has proved to be the case, with resistance underreported, Congress in the U.S. and Parliament in the U.K. becoming sheep barely bleating a complaint, and rubber stamping Iraq invasion despite the warning signs. The power grab for Middle East oil was considered a success. The counter to the energy. The original plan assumed an ability to plant evidence, and here they have hit a snag. Imagine a world where weapons of mass destruction had been found in Iraq as predicted. Imagine a world where repeated terrorist attacks on the U.S. had occurred. Instead, the raw hand of greed reaching for the major oil fields of the Middle East, Iraq, and the Saudi fields stands exposed. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Changing Captains. And indeed, that's what's going on today in 2005. Complaints about no exit plan. Quagmire, another Vietnam. Weapons of mass destruction were never found. What's more, they were never there. The White House lied. Ah, snagged in their own ambitions, because they went into Iraq a bit too early. Why was that? To counter this Bush plan, which the Zetas knew would emerge as the time of the pole shift approached, the Zetas planned to lead this group astray, and did so with the May 15, 2003 prediction for the passage. Why, beyond the astonishing Zeta Talk accuracy on predictions, would the Bush administration trust what the Zetas had said? They don't lie, had that reputation, but in this case they did, a white lie. Why? To lead the Bush administration into a quagmire to weaken their ability to use the U.S. military for their ends. The powerful U.S. military, a military as powerful and large as all other militaries around the globe put together, had been taken over by a coup of the White House. So what happened going into May 15, 2003? Planet X had entered the solar system, zooming in from the direction of Orion, exactly at the coordinates predicted by the Zetas. In its sling orbit, it picks up great speed when approaching the Sun, then stalls as it creeps past the Sun. But just how much of a stall and how long it would creep was an unknown to man, who's unfamiliar with a sling orbit. Thus, when the Zetas said it would sling through the inner solar system in 3 short months, they believed them. Thus, when the Zetas said it would become visible 7 weeks before passage, naked eye, and it did become visible as a red blur in the evening sky near Orion starting March 26, 2003, they believed this confirmed the May 15, 2003 passage date. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Why May 15th? Written October 17, 2003. As has been explained previously, all Zeta Talk information keyed to the May 15th date was part of the white lie. This included the 7.3 weeks of naked eye visibility leading up to that date, so that when naked eye viewing of a red light fading in and out at our coordinates became visible in very late March, this brought weight to the May 15th date, always designed to fool the establishment. Nancy has pointed out several clues that May 15th was not and could not have been the date, and that we have stated in Zeta Talk that Planet X would dive 32 degrees below the ecliptic prior to passage, and at May 15th, 2003, our coordinates had only dropped to 7 degrees below that ecliptic. We also stated firmly in November 2001 that no date would be given as it would allow the establishment to mistreat the populace. Had any other date been given, say March 15th or July 15th, the approach of Planet X would have been discernible, our white lie disproved, as the angle from Earth would have allowed motion to be detected across the skies, rather than a direct head-on approach which disguised the distance. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Thus, during the crucial weeks approaching May 15th, 2003, they braced for the passage. Shortly before May 15, 2003, the United States government initiated Operation Top Off 2, which was to involve Seattle, Chicago, and Washington, D.C., and over 100 different agencies, including Canadian participation. And other terrorism exercises followed, including Winter Sun in New York City and its environs. Cross-continental, North American-wide. Operation Top Off 2 is still, as of this date, considered, and I quote from a Canadian participant, the largest and most comprehensive terrorism response and homeland security exercise ever conducted in the United States. The Top Off 1 exercises were done in 2000, a tiny affair, and again in 2003, a massive affair, and again in 2005. But the Top Off 3 exercises in 2005 were tiny, only involving Connecticut and New Jersey. And I quote from Chertoff himself, describing the size of the 2003 exercises. This is from GeoIntel Mag. Chertoff said that he expects valuable lessons to come from the analysis of Topov 3 in 2005, just as they came from the two prior exercises in 2000 and 2003. Topov 2 in 2003 took place in Seattle, Chicago, and Canada in May of 2003, and Topov 1 took place in May of 2000. Topov 1 is reported to have resulted in the establishment of a national security strategy. End of the quote. Notice they don't even mention the scope of the first Topov exercises, apparently too small to even be mentioned. Operation Planet X in Iraq was run on May 15th. Operation Planet X? And I quote from the Global Security website. On or about May 15, 2003, U.S. Armed Forces raided a village about 11 miles south of Tikrit. U.S. forces were searching for Ba'ath Party members and militants. The operation was dubbed Planet X and resulted in the capture of 260 prisoners. The searches also resulted in the capture of 17 bricks of plastic explosive. End of the quote. Well, this indicates that the U.S. military was aware of the Zeta Talk predictions. On the Lou Gentile live radio show, May 16, 2003, the Zetas gave a specific date of May 27, 2003, and reasons for being specific at that time. They gave details, such as the day a late sunset could be expected, rotation stoppage expected, and the exact number of days in decimals until the hour of the shift. When you see how the U.S. government reacted after this announcement on live radio, you'll understand why the Zetas were pulling their leg. Their goal, the U.S. government's goal, as they were aware of Planet X and its approach, was to deny this information to the populace up until the end and be in a position to blockade them in their homes during coastal drowning and river basin drowning. Here is the specific date information given on May 16, 2003 on a live radio show. And I quote from that Zeta Talk. If the shift occurs on May 27th and rotation stoppage is for a 5.9 days length of time, then count back 5.9 days to find the date when rotation stops. So on May 21st, 5.9 days before the shift, the Atlantic Rift is positioned facing the approaching Planet X, thus slowing in rotation during the May 20th turn of the globe. End of the quote. Pretty specific. So given barely days until rotation slowing was supposed to start, what did the U.S. government do? The week following May 16, 2003, terrorism exercises were scheduled for the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. Homeland Security went to level orange with no other excuse than recent attacks in other countries, though these attacks were not unusual. Level red, where citizens can be ordered to remain in their homes, was the next step. Did any announcement by the U.S. government occur that evacuation of the coastal areas should be done? Nope. Did the U.S. government position to barricade its citizens in place to keep them from leaving the cities and coastlines? Yep. And I quote from Zeta Talk, White Lie, written May 23, 2003. What is martial law if not ordering citizens to remain in their homes? What effect does this have on citizens within cities where buildings will tumble and crush them, or along coastal or inland lowlands, sure to be inundated by tidal waves? Death, injury with no rescue, and massive die-off. Is this the intent of those in command in the U.S. government, sworn to protect their citizens and collecting taxes to this end? Why did we allow Nancy, who has labored through minefields to put herself at risk with Zeta Talk, to be so humiliated as to announce to a broad audience live radio show very specific dates, which were promptly missed. At a time when Planet X is so close as to be competing with the Sun at noon, visible by the unaided eye, and well tracked to this point by many sunrise and sunset sightings and photos, in the manner and in the time frame we predicted, and at a time when earthquakes have increased to the point, as we predicted, to being noticeable, affecting population centers so they cannot be denied by underreporting in the quake databases, the bad dates stand as an exception. And what is the effect on the common man, being denied even at this late date any honest information on what is about to devastate their lives? For those waiting for an undeniable sight that the Earth changes we have predicted, rotation stoppage followed by red dusting that will be an undeniable sign, any announced date will be ignored until such signs are evident. For those wanting to leave for a safe location ahead of rotation stoppage, but having ties to their ordinary life and obligations, rapid Earth changes such as a perceptible slowing of rotation will be their clue, regardless of published dates. For those who have made very early changes in their lives, moving to safe locations and settling in there, an exact date is not crucial. For the vast majority of mankind who has not even heard of a possible pole shift, announcing dates is irrelevant. For the large portion of humanity who cannot move to safe locations or make changes in their lives, as their lives are a struggle for subsistence on a daily basis, announced dates are also irrelevant. For those who are traveling for work or pleasure, they have chosen to be out and about at this time, or to place themselves in such a position by their employment choice, and thus are not taking the message seriously, nor would they despite any announced date. Thus, an announced date, where it would be convenient, does not change the outcome of preparation for the common man, where it would greatly be used by those who would murder their citizens or take advantage of others, and thus we decline to give any dates. Watching the Earth changes and the behavior of those in the corridors of power will be the best clues. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. There were, of course, inconveniences, myself included, as I ran every charge card I could get my hands on up to the limit and was on the edge of bankruptcy for years after the May 15, 2003 date came and went. I'd been on a good salary on the West Coast. I'd gotten those charge cards based on that. Here in Wisconsin, where I moved to walk my own talk in 1999, I was on a limited income, on pensions. And these charge cards did not fit my income, up and over the top. There was going to be no tomorrow. Beyond the financial, I was in shock. High blood pressure, almost unable to function for weeks. Like a bug hitting the windshield at 100 miles per hour and forced to live afterwards, that's the way I felt. I truly believed this would happen, as all other predictions by the Zetas had been so on target. Well, the Bush cabal would hardly have been inclined to take action if I had not been fooled, along with everyone else. And I can tell you there were people watching my actions very closely that week of May 15th. I had visitors. Some of them had been in the military, were in the military, career military officers, and just fans of Zeta Talk. And how was I doing? Day after day, hour after hour, sitting on my porch, watching me prepare for the Earth to stop rotating. But to those who say it was not worth it, the white lie, I point to the Bush administration's posture on May 15, 2003. They would have run into code red, declared martial law, forced the citizens in inner cities and along the coast to shelter in place and drown there. They were in position to do this then, as they had not been disgraced in Iraq, proven as liars on many points, and had the U.S. military following orders from the Commander-in-Chief, George W. Bush. But they had gone forth too early with these moves into Iraq, so where are they now? If the May 15, 2003 date was designed to fool the Bush administration into invading Iraq early, so that the situation would deteriorate completely, the U.S. military would revolt, and the world refused to think of the U.S. as the flagship of democracy and thus their leader. How have things panned out? Bush is in the White House, can't get him out. The U.S. military is in revolt, and the best the puppet master can do is a decapitation. The puppet master wanted Kerry to win the 2004 election to bring the U.S. military back under the commander-in-chief, by which he, the puppet master, could more easily control the U.S. military to guard his assets and interests around the world. But rebellion was afoot in the White House. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Kerry's concession, written January 4, 2005. Why would a determined former prosecutor, armed with so much evidence of wrongdoing, with the heart of the nation behind him and a history of leading the charge, as he did during the Vietnam War, cave so quickly? It was a puppet master decision, based on the mess laid out before him. His instructions to Bush and Cheney had been to lose, but for some time, as we have mentioned, rebellion had been festering in the Bush administration, with men such as Cheney and Rove ambitious for more than a puppet status, wanting peership after the cataclysms, with control of both Americas, if not a larger chunk of the world. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Ignoring the puppet master's commands, the arrogant Bush cabal defended the orders and used massive vote fraud to secure the 2004 election. Just how bad was it? For those not paying attention, one-third of the votes in the country were gathered on machines that did not have a paper trail. But the worst of the matter was the tabulating machines, also manufactured and programmed by Diebold, which allowed their totals to be manipulated as easily as an Excel spreadsheet on a computer, by a laptop in a parking lot nearby, remotely, or by technicians from the company directly into the tabulating machines, by phone line. Voting booth personnel reported seeing the totals changing in front of their eyes to numbers for Bush impossible for the precinct to even carry. All of this was allowed into the official counts, scarcely reported in the media, and put Bush into the Oval Office for another undeserved four-year term. In fact, based on the exit counts, which are historically accurate, Kerry won by 5 million, but we're told that Bush won by 3 million. These counts for Bush only happened where there was no paper trail and where Diebold was in charge. Then it was excessive for Bush, and where there was a paper trail, it almost lined exactly to the exit polls. Bev Harris, one of the main sleuths of the voter fraud, reports, and I quote, manipulation techniques found in the Diebold central tabulators. 1,000 of these systems are in place, and they count up to 2 million votes at a time. By entering a two-digit code in a hidden location, a second set of votes is created. This set of votes can be changed so that it no longer matches the correct votes. The voting system will then read the totals from the bogus vote set. Whether you vote absentee, on touch screens, or on paper ballot optical scan machines, all votes are ultimately brought to the central tabulator at the county, which adds them all up and creates the results report. This problem appears to demonstrate intent to manipulate elections. GEMS Systems, a Diebold system, contains three sets of books. Ask an accountant, it is never appropriate to have two sets of books inside accounting software. The data tables in accounting software automatically link up to each other to prevent illicit backdoor entries. In GEMS, however, the voting system will draw information from a combination of the real votes and a set of fake votes, which you can alter any way you see fit. End of the quote from Bev Harris. And here's a quote from TechDirt. Diebold employed at least five convicted felons in management positions. It turns out that Diebold employed at least 5 convicted felons in management roles at their voting machine subsidiary. In fact, a senior VP of the group, who was responsible for writing and maintaining the code used in their voting systems, served time in prison for stealing money and tampering with computer files. End of the quote from Techter. I might add at this point that Diebold produces ATM machines for banks, and these have a paper trail. They knew that this type of accounting needed a paper trail, and they deliberately eliminated a paper trail. And I quote from MSNBC, "Thousands of Florida ballots are missing. Broward Deputy Supervisor of Elections said 60,000 absentee ballots, accounting for just over 5% of the electorate in the county north of Miami, were sent out between October 7th and October 8th to voters who would not be in town on Election Day. While some had begun to be delivered, her office has been inundated with calls from anxious voters who still have not received their ballots. The U.S. Postal Service inspector, whose federal agency is independent from the U.S. Postal Service, said yet to be determined if the ballots ever reached their post office." End of the quote from MSNBC. Well, I believe it was 58,000 absentee ballots that never got received and never got entered in a predominantly Democratic county. And I quote from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. "The head of a company vying to sell voting machines in Ohio told Republicans in a recent fundraising letter that he is committed to helping Ohio deliver its electoral votes to the president next year. The letter from the chief executive of Diebold, who has been active in the re-election efforts of President Bush, prompted Democrats this week to question the propriety of allowing his company to calculate votes in the 2004 presidential election." End of the quote from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Ah, did we have alternatives to Diebold? Sure we did. Alternatives with a paper trail. But they died. Are we surprised? And I quote from the Tennessean, "Voting paper trail advocate dies in tragic accident." Gibbs, an accountant for more than 30 years and the inventor of the True Vote system, died when his vehicle collided with an 18-wheeler truck which rolled his Chevy Blazer several times and forced it over the highway retaining wall where it came to a rest on its roof. End of the quote. Ah, tragic accident. And this man, who was displaying the accuracy of his machine and advocating it as an alternative to Diebold, was silenced. Well, the puppet master was not amused. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Diebold wins," written November 3, 2004. "As was known going into the election, one-third of the votes would be under the cover of Diebold computers. No paper trail, central tabulating machines with an extra set of counts that could override the real count, all designed to steal the vote, which it did, particularly in Florida and Ohio. With a massive turnout in Palm Beach before Bush, after what occurred in 2000, could Florida be trusted after losing 58,000 absentee ballots in a Democratic county in the month before the election? We stated that Kerry would win the popular vote, but as the election is in the hands of man, whether this means he takes the White House would be unsure. As the puppet master's choice was Kerry, over half the vote fraud was deflected by the puppet master's covert operations, else the electoral win by Bush would have been 302 votes rather than 254, with Ohio contested. The puppet master is not pleased and will enact revenge, and the puppet master has more cards than can be imagined." End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And per the Zetas, the puppet master set out on a decapitation process. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Bush Busting," written November 27, 2004. "Too many rats slipped through the puppet master's attempt to counter this gambit by his errant puppets in the Bush administration. Now what? He will take the bush camp down in subtle and not-so-subtle ways, reducing their influence in the world and within the United States to noise, irrelevant, discredited, despised, and ignored. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Bush Busting. But Bush blustered on, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Wizard of Oz, written February 2005. We have stated that in the power shakeout that will accompany the pole shift, those at the very top and those forming sustainable survival communities at the bottom will emerge as winners. No one will need the middleman. As the Earth's changes become more extreme, more obvious, and the public no longer placated by inadequate explanations, these middlemen are looking about them for a niche in the future. These future roles will go only to those puppets the puppet master is comfortable with. This does not include Bush and his handlers, as on several fronts they have failed and disappointed the puppet master. Oil in the Middle East was to be secured for the future, for the puppet master, but the Iraq war, engaged early due to our white lie about the timing of the shift, was poorly planned and has now destroyed the Iraq oil fields and turned the region into chaos. The 2004 election was to find Kerry as the new leadership in the U.S., a plan the Bush crowd did not accept and sabotaged with massive election fraud. The Yukos oil fields in Russia were put into play because of attempted grabs by Cheney and earlier by the Bush family. Thus, this crowd is seen as failing to deliver, causing problems, and failing to follow orders. Hardly a good resume when seeking future employment. Bush and his handlers have sought to place themselves in a peer position with the puppet master, to assert dominance over the Americas and a binding alliance with Japan and Israel, and having a foothold into dominance in the Middle East and Asia. The oil fields of the world, from Alaska to Venezuela, which the U.S. is attempting to destabilize, to Nigeria, where the U.S. has planted Marines under the guise of assisting the country, to the unprotected North fields in Europe, to the occupied Iraqi fields and neighboring Saudi fields lying like ripe fruit waiting for the picking, to those fields in Russia accessible by an inroad through occupied Pakistan, are viewed by the Bush crowd as theirs. That the U.S. military is exhausted and in rebellion, and the whole house of cards requiring a massive influx of cash daily from countries such as China and Japan and Korea, is ignored. Instead, an arrogant insistence that Iran submit to dictates is being issued, so the U.S. can have a unified front under the Russian oil fields, from Iraq to Iran to Pakistan. Has the Bush crowd lost its grasp on reality? The puppet master can pull the cash carpet from under Bush, effectively crashing him into domestic chaos and affecting the military operations, and this card may yet be played. At present, the Bush bluster is seen as just that, as the Bush plans to dominate the world require that the world go along with this agenda. Behind the curtain, the wizard Bush is seen for what he is, weak, cowardly, failing, and now begging for support. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Wizard of Oz. Decapitation had just about been accomplished by the fall of 2005, in that the Zetas predicted this decapitation process over a year earlier, right after the 2004 elections. The only source to so predict what has come about, this is yet another example of Zeta Talk accuracy. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Decapitation Process, written August 19, 2005. We stated when Bush stole the 2004 election that the puppet master was furious, as he wanted a respected Vietnam vet, John Kerry, to bring a rebelling U.S. military into line, a situation that certainly would not occur with Bush continuing in office. Why does the puppet master care? because the U.S. military has and is being used to protect his assets and interests at home and abroad. The massive U.S. military, equal in size to the combined military of all other countries in the world, has bases everywhere, and the man with a gun gets cooperation with U.S. interests abroad. Chosen as much for their weakness as for any skill or political savvy they may possess, puppets are expected to allow their strings to be pulled once installed into office. But Bush and those around him had let the power of the U.S. military go to their heads. They would be king. They would commandeer all the oil fields in the world and control what they foresee as the prime commodity in the aftertime, black gold. Bush busting promptly began, the first volley financial. Despite all lies to the contrary, the health of the U.S. economy is plunging. More layoffs, more bankruptcies, overinflated and underfunded and utterly dependent upon investors from abroad. What has the situation been since the 2004 election was stolen? Rising interest rates at the Federal Reserve, which the puppet master controls, while the U.S. economy plunges. Logical only when one considers that the puppet master plans to decapitate the U.S. bureaucracy and plunging the U.S. government into a financial crisis with a sudden withdrawal of funds from the Fed and from countries abroad which he has great influence with, will be one weapon at his disposal. Bush, meanwhile, having formerly been an alcoholic, is now drunk on continued spending sprees, his foray into Iraq a hemorrhage he refuses to address. Weapon one, financial disaster, with the U.S. Congress frantically looking to cut expenses in the face of the Bush administration's adamant insistence that their conquest of oil fields continue, and now into Iran. The second Bush-busting volley is unveiling political corruption within the Bush administration. Shall we count the ways this has emerged? The Downing Street memo demonstrating clearly that Bush lied to the public about his plans to invade Iraq. The Valerie Plame outing, which has Karl Rove in the office of Dick Cheney front and center and is currently before a grand jury. War profiteering via Halliburton, with contracts skipping the bidding process and fraudulent invoices being rewarded with bonuses. Where this is not yet seen as removing Bush from office, it has an eroding effect on the Congress and the public. Little by little, the fingers of loyalty weaken and let go. Where the public stands its loyalty to a president that has been sworn in front of a Congress that failed to challenge the 2004 election, the depth of its loyalty is now paper thin. Election fraud via diebold voting machines that had votes for one-third of the nation recorded without a paper trail, and the central tabulating machines admittedly editable from a laptop in a parking lot nearby, all ignored by the loyal Republican Congress. Should a congressman worry? Weapon two, the changing face of Congress. The third Bush-busting volley is eroding public sentiment for what Bush had hoped would be a wartime presidency. What war? The one that was waged based on a lie? The one that was for any reason but to defend America from terrorism? The one that was made to make America free from worry, a safer place? For public sentiment to erode, the media must cooperate, and anyone taking the pulse of the media lately must admit there has been a change. Look behind the newscaster to see the hand at the helm of the major media outlets. It is not Bush and company. Though they can suppress reports by asserting a national security rationale, they cannot dictate the tenor and tone of the news. Where the Downing Street memo received little press, Karl Rove was dragged about on major media endlessly for his alleged role in the Plame outing. Public exposés are not over in this battle for the hearts and minds of the U.S. public, as more are in the wings and waiting their time. The public has already decided they no longer approve of their president, not for his performance in Iraq, nor on the economy, and there is little left except respect for the office of president to shore him up. Weapon three, an angry public. What is the energy during a decapitation process between economic quagmires, congressional alarm, public disgruntlement, and the military balking? Each magnifies the other. A war effort that has a strong public support does not get challenged by Congress, regardless of legalities. A president viewed as genuinely concerned about the public interest is forgiven economic quagmires by the public. But when the argument is that national security is at stake, the safety of the American public at issue, then the media hesitates to criticize the leadership. But when this leadership has been exposed as utterly lacking in integrity, out for self-profit, and breaking both the intent and letter of the law with aplomb, what then? When Congress begins to vote against the Bush White House wishes, what then? When the public polls show the support for the president and his policies diving for the bottom, what then? A feeding frenzy begins, where this has terrified some within the Bush White House. The prevailing mode has been stubborn refusal to change. This is not the resolve of strength, but the rigidity of the weak. This is the two-year-old having a tantrum, insisting on his way. Enter the role of the military. They were, of course, disappointed to have as their assigned commander-in-chief a man who avoided his duty during the Vietnam War to the extent of being AWOL in the reserves. The truth of this was not lost on the military, which has its own information channels, but the military is restrained from speaking out against a sitting commander-in-chief, so the truth of this is lost on the public. They did, of course, advise against invading Iraq and were bitter when their advice was not taken. Follow this with a disastrous Rumsfeld plan to rush to Baghdad, leaving the supply routes vulnerable, and you have the setting we see today in Iraq. Endless battles and endless dead and maimed soldiers. Morale is far worse than during Vietnam, a story not allowed to be told, where the military is based on command and control hierarchy. In theory, following the commander-in-chief, there is a second tradition, rebellion by hapless blundering. Prison torture, carried out by mercenaries reporting directly to Rumsfeld, is revealed by military photos. Oops. Bush sees the grim military faces, forced to attend his frequent pep talks to the public, using them as backdrops, and imagines this cooperation. Has he not noticed the smiles fading? The lack of applause, even on orders? The word gets down to the lower echelons that the officers no longer consider Bush their commander, and rebellion is afoot. This flashes about on the internet as rumors of a coup, but this is not the result. The result is increasing refusal to follow direct orders. Up and down the line, just how many court-martials can the military entertain simultaneously? Historically, when a military turns against a king, the king has lost his footing and is doomed. What next? A Shakespearean drama is about to unfold, with the synergy of undercutting the Bush administration creating a maelstrom under him that will astonish those who thought him strong. Bush busting, a decapitation of his influence such that the U.S. is no longer run from the White House, but is on autopilot according to law and conscience. Such is the puppet master's plan, and there has not been a battle instigated by this puppet master that he has lost. The outcome is certain. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Decapitation Process. Can we point to a problematic relationship between Bush and the U.S. military as proof? Let's take a recent visit to NORTHCOM as an example. During Hurricane Rita, while Cindy Sheehan staged her anti-war march in Washington, Bush fled to Texas, but was quickly gathered up there unexpectedly and taken to NORTHCOM. Was he under arrest? He, in 2000, wanting to commandeer the U.S. military so he could commandeer all the oil fields of the world, using the U.S. military to guard them. But now they commandeering him? Sounds like political karma to me. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Bush Countercoup, written September 26, 2005. What happened to the swagger, the bravado, Quips like "Bring 'em on" ready attacks against U.S. soldiers in Iraq. Bush looks defeated, deflated, depressed, and frankly scared. There have, of course, been setbacks. The plan to extend the tax cut to the rich, on hold. The plan to privatize Social Security, to pour those funds into a faltering stock market, no longer even mentioned. The plans to invade Iran to preempt any nuclear threat by rallying the rest of the world at the UN, a fizzle. The plans to invade Iran and Venezuela for their oil reserves, stymied because the U.S. military is needed at home and is insisting it must leave Iraq to attend to the home front, rather than securing and guarding oil reserves for the Bush crowd. But all these setbacks are not new. The loss of his swagger is new and has presented just since his visit to NORTHCOM on the day Hurricane Rita hit and military exercises simulating martial law were in full swing around the nation. Is there a relationship? The U.S. military revolted against Bush during the vacation month of August 2003, removing the football from his control, the nuclear codes, and relaying that he was no longer considered their commander-in-chief. Gore, as a legitimately elected commander-in-chief, was whom they were reporting to in the interim. All branches of the U.S. military except the Navy were so inclined. The Navy, with their nuclear submarines and control of timekeeping and observatories, remaining loyal. Thus, we recently had an admiral assigned to NORTHCOM, the military arm of Homeland Security for defense of the entire North American continent. Recently, the Navy was signaling a switch, the military altogether in revolt against the Bush cabal. Bush was not invited to go to NORTHCOM for the exercises during the busy weekend when Rita was slamming the coast and VP Cheney was in surgery. He was taken there under arrest. The unmistakable change in his visage after being released, a clue to what occurred. Scared, unable to smile, wearing the same shirt for days, even when appearing in public, cowed, brought to heel. What happened at NORTHCOM? The original Bush plan was to become dictator of the world, secure all the oil fields and guard them with the U.S. military, impose martial law in the U.S. using the existing statutes allowing FEMA to take control in emergencies, and via the new and powerful Homeland Security statutes, become dictator for life. No more elections, no more Congress, just Bush for life while controlling federal, state, and local governments by the strong arm of the U.S. military. So went the plan. If the U.S. military was in revolt, except for the Navy, find a way around the top brass, coming in the side door via NORTHCOM and Homeland Security. This all assumes that NORTHCOM and the Navy continue to be willing to follow the dictates of Homeland Security. Oops. They have some bad news for Bush and company. They joined the revolt. What now? If one analyzes the agencies that now ally with the Bush administration, or line up against, Bush has a weak field. Resistance is broad and deep. He stands as a figurehead only, hoping to appease those truly in control, and hoping that no one else notices his fall from grace. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. Those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogginservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.